honest with opportunity for you to talk to him again. Who am I talking about? I'm talking probably about one of the most famous attorneys in the United States today. His name is Charles Gary. There's a book called Street Fighter in the Courtroom, The People's Advocate. That certainly he is. If you'd like to talk to Charles Gary on his Halloween, get your phones ready. There he is, Charles Gary, Street Fighter in the Courtroom, who has just returned from Guyana. The Reverend Jim Jones in the People's Temple? Right, but he's your client. Right, all right. Given that perspective that he's your client, I still want to know what you saw when you were down in Guyana. I gotta be blunt, I don't even know where Guyana is. I mean, I know roughly where it is.
It's on the northeastern part of South America. It's adjoining Venezuela.
So in other words, it's the 101 South, and just keep going.
Now what you do is you go to New York first, and you take the Pan Am to Georgetown, Guyana. Then from Georgetown, you take a government plane into Kennedy, where it's called Matthews Ridge. And from there, you take a rover ride for 40 miles into what we call Jonestown. And there you find paradise.
Well, why would you have to go that far to find paradise? For that matter, why did Reverend Jim Jones go that far to find paradise?
I don't know why he did that, but I'm telling you, that is paradise. I have never seen anything so beautiful in my life.
You're talking physical description. Yeah.
Physical description and what the People's Temple's mission has been doing there and are doing there.
Well, give me an example.
Well, there's over 800 of the members of the church there now, and they've set up at least 90 cottages, and they're tearing down trees, they're building that entire area. They've done an agricultural mission there where they're raising their own food, their own livestock, chickens. And I was there for 3 days, and they've got a city and a community all mapped out and actually functioning. They've got a medical center there that's equal to Mayo Brothers, in my opinion. Every person who goes there has to be medically examined. I was examined. I guess one of the reasons I was examined is that Jim Jones wanted to make sure that his lawyer was healthy.
Well, would have examined your hand.
And the doctor there, a young doctor, graduated from the University of California, who was a member of the mission.
Right.
And he went to medical school. He was a drug dropout in his younger days, and Jim Jones picked him up and brought him in and sent him to medical school, and he graduated with high honors from the University of California in Irvine. And the medical center there is something to behold. Around the medical compound are all of the senior citizen cottages. The doctor said to me that after you're there for a month, if you had high blood pressure, it drops down at least 20%. And he said that the people there who have had blood pressure have their blood pressure examined 3 times a day, morning, noon, and night, on both arms, because there's a variance between the left arm and the right arm, apparently, on blood pressure. But more startling than that is that the senior citizens that are there, every single morning, someone goes to the cottage and says, did anyone have any problems during the night?
Well, when you say someone, you're saying a medical person, a doctor, a nurse, or what?
Part of the medical compound,
the personnel, right?
And the paramedics. And they say, did anyone have any problems during the night? Can you imagine the security that these senior citizens feel that there's someone that cares for them, that someone's interested in them?
Well, again, proportion number of people. I mean, how many medical people are there for every citizen that's there?
Well, there's 800 there. There's a doctor there.
A doctor, but the medical team.
Then the medical team is composed of about 18.
They're the ones that go out.
They're the ones that go out.
Okay, a couple of quick things, because I don't want to strictly talk about the people's tent, or I want your opinions on a lot of things that are going on in our own government right now, local trials and the like, because you're the man with, well, Huey Newton was one of the most famous cases. We will touch on that, Richard Helms, the CIA, but a couple of quick things on the Reverend Jim Jones and the People's Temple. Number one, when Phil Tracy of New West Magazine wrote the article, one of the allegations were that there were beatings that were going on down in Guyana as a means of discipline. Now, I would look at an assumption, and I'm sure you would agree, even if that were the case, I doubt seriously that would have gone on in front of you, but I think you're probably insightful enough to know what is going on and to have asked around what was the reaction to these various New West charges that have been made in the last few months about Jim Jones and the People's Temple.
Well, the people that are there are very antagonistic to the charges against the temple. They consider that as a divisive and false allegations. And if there were any beatings there, I saw no evidences of it. As a matter of fact, I saw people working around the clock. I saw a 103-year-old black man working 12 to 14 hours a day, and I went in and there chatted with him for 2 or 3 hours. And the tales that he would tell me, and the things that he would tell me would just make you feel as though that you're living in a land of paradise. That's the way it hit me.
But here again in the article, the connotation was deliberately this isolated a place was chosen because you'd go batty from boredom if you weren't working 12 to 14 hours a day. Is that the truth?
There's no way in the world that you can be bored there. They have entertainment each and every night that just throws you around.
What
dancing,
kind of entertainment? What are you talking about?
Dancing, singing. They've got organs there. They've got for instance, I stayed in the guest house.
Right.
It's equivalent to being in the Hyatt house in the presidential suite. That's how comfortable it was. They've got wells that they've dug in right into the jungle. They've got 4 generators where they've got electricity all over the 900 acres. Now, they work from diesel fuel.
Diesel fuel.
Fuel,
right,
yeah.
Right.
Now they're now going to convert into steam. They've brought in a generator from England because diesel is so expensive. For instance, gasoline at the place is $3.90 a gallon.
We'll probably be right here next week.
Yeah, next week.
The way things are going.
But it's tremendous.
Okay, one last question, and I'll drop the People's Temple unless people have questions on it. And that is a very blunt one. I'm sure you must have talked about this while you were down there. Why did the Reverend Jim Jones leave San Francisco? Apparently, he's not coming back.
He's not coming back, and it's not for the reasons that people think it is. It involves a child, one single child of his own, that I'm not free to go any further than that.
All right.
Until that is resolved, he is not coming back.
Having said that, you've gotten that information from Charles Garry. Let me now open up our telephone lines, too. As I said, the last time Mr. Garry was on, the lines were just jumping. Everybody wanted to talk. Everybody had a lot to say. And interestingly enough, and we had talked about that, had I interviewed Charles Garry in Atlanta, the calls would have been almost uniformly hostile. The last time he was on, it was almost unified. It was love and peace and warmth, and my God, you're the greatest guy in the world. I want to hear that. I also want to hear those people who perhaps have different opinions from Mr. Garry. Charles Garry, certainly willing to answer any question that you've got for him in San Francisco at 478-3456, in the East Bay at 832-9707, San Jose 272-1233, Marin at 453-6523. As I said during the next segment, among other things, we'll talk a little bit about Richard Helms, who today was severely punished for the charge of perjury, severely punished. We shall talk about that and other items as we continue in the depth. Before we go to our telephones, let us at least get your reaction. I mean, we just heard the news here. Richard Helms winds up getting a 1-year suspended sentence and a $100 fine for lying to the U.S. Senate. You testified before Congress, haven't you?
Yeah.
What do you think you'd get if you lied?
I'd probably get the maximum.
Which would be what? I mean,
five years.
5 years. He gets a 1-year suspended sentence. Sorry, Now, to play devil's advocate, let me try and get governmental reasoning. They would say that to put Richard Helms on trial, and apparently there's an organization, Friends of Helms, that have been gathered, and they have been kind of sinisterly spinning that word, but if you put Richard Helms on trial, you'll say, fine. All right, I'll testify, but I'm going to spill the beans on everything. You're a criminal attorney. Is that blackmail?
It's called extortion.
Extortion, is that what it is?
Extortion. Blackmail is a kind of a crude terminology. Extortion is a little fancier.
Well, do you think the government had any justification for giving that 1 year suspended sentence?
Well, you see, I'm not interested whether he got 1 year or 10 years, but it's unequal justice, isn't it? This man lied before the Congress of the United States deliberately, willfully, intentionally, and he's not just some foreigner that doesn't understand what the truth is or understand the language. This man was way high in our government. And what does he get for? He doesn't even get a slap in the wrist. He gets a suspended sentence. That's really what he's getting. And it's disgusting to me.
We have talked about this before. If you look at Richard Helms, I didn't mention his name earlier. If you look at Richard Helms, you look at an Ehrlichman, a Mitchell, and a Haldeman who got their sentences reduced. You look at the sentence given to Spiro Agnew for bribery.
No sentence.
I mean, that no way to compare. It's just, you look at all of that. Yet, on the other hand, can you then say, well, then that justifies, that's a justification for people going out and committing crimes. People saying, look, I know that no matter what I do, they're going to throw the book at me. So what's the difference? What have I got to lose? I know there's no way I'm going to be treated the same way as those other cats go through.
You know what bothers me more than anything else is the fact that these men that you're talking about were responsible for the violence. The violence that we perpetrated all over the world, they are responsible for creating the violence and the hunger and everything else that goes along in our own communities. And what do they get for it? They talked about law and order. Helms talked about law and order. Mitchell, Nixon, the whole shebang talked about law and order when they themselves were creating the diabolical violence that goes on in our streets. They were setting the example of the men and women of America in responding in the only way that they knew was the way Nixon and others were responding to violence.
Do you think that sentences like these are going to lead to some kind of, I don't want to use the word revolution, but sort of breakdown in society as we know it?
Well, the minute something like this happens and the news gets over into San Quentin, Folsom, the other prisons, you ought to hear what they say.
I mentioned that the night that they reduced the sentences of Haldeman, Ehrlichman, and Mitchell.
You ought to hear what they say.
Yeah, well, what do they say? You tell me.
They say all kinds of things that I'm not capable of repeating on the air. I don't think that the FCC would appreciate the language that I would be repeating.
I think we can get the picture, though. Let's take some calls. Line 1 in San Francisco. Your guest is Charles Gary and KGO. I'm Ron Owens. Good evening.
Hi.
Yes.
My name is Tim. I'd like to ask Mr. Gary what kind of arrangements they're making for education for the children at this agricultural project in Guyana.
That's a very good question. They've got at least 50 outstanding teachers and educators in Guyana right now. And they've got classes that go on constantly of teenagers, children, and older people, with educational classes going on every hour of the day up until about 8 o'clock at night.
What about certification? I mean, would this kind of an education be literally honored anywhere in the world?
Yes.
It would?
Yes, because the type of education, classes, the books that they're teaching from. For instance, I went into a class where they were teaching calculus to a 10 to 12-year-old group. I've never heard of anything like that. They were studying sciences. There's some outstanding teachers there, some real outstanding teachers with high credentials.
All right, then we'll go to Line 8 in San Jose. Charles Gary, your guest. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Marlene, and I have several questions to ask you, Mr. Gary, if you wouldn't mind. Number one, the jurisdictional problem. I mean, how can Mr. Jones or Reverend Jones be reached at this point jurisdictionally? I mean, what is one representing, really?
I don't know what you mean by jurisdiction.
I mean, can he be held to answer anything in this country since he can't be extradited, or can he? I mean, what can anything...
This country would have no jurisdiction over him.
That's exactly what I mean. Now, the next thing is, as far as you're going out there, did Mr. Jones or Reverend Jones pay for your expenditures in connection to your visit?
Yes, he did.
Now, would you mind if I'm awfully honest? I mean, your observations as to his paradise, which I have no reason to doubt you whatsoever. But just doing my homework here and reading my books and listening to this, I find it awfully odd that, you know, somebody whose trip is paid for and who is in fact representing someone, that they're getting this marvelous picture. We really don't have any corroborating witnesses to this effect.
Marlene, I said at the very beginning, I mentioned that, and I said, knowing that subjectivity, because after all, remember when I asked Charles Gary, I said, you are his attorney. So realizing that subjectivity,
right. Then
I asked those questions.
Yeah, so I do have a few questions. The other thing is that, what exactly is it is he in terms of representing a Reverend Jones?
Well, that's a matter between attorney client, and I'm not privileged to divulge that.
They're not public. So far, we have no exact charges or order, in fact, some.
I'm not privy to divulge attorney client confidential
relationship. I mean, in other words, if there were some charges, they'd be public.
In other words, which if there were charges, there would be charges against him right now.
Mm-hmm. Not as far as I know.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Okay, Marlene. Thank you. Marlene calling from the San Jose area. That's 272-1233. And if you'd like to talk to Charles Gary, best chance of getting through would be the East Bay at 832-9707. And a line open in San Francisco, 478-3456.
Hear that? That's someone saving time and making...
Charles Gary, author of Street Fighter in the Courtroom. A lot more people want to talk to you. I'll ask you a quick question. In fact, I'll even do better than that. I'll give you one name. Huey Newton. Man is on trial right now. Your comments.
My comment is that the preliminary hearing was completed this afternoon, and all I have is what I've read in the newspaper, but I've been privy to confidential information and the investigation went on. And I'm satisfied that if he's held to answer, that at the trial he will be acquitted.
Why aren't you his attorney at the trial?
I was in the San Quentin 6 case, and which went on for 17 months. And when he decided to come back, I was not available, and he'd already made arrangements with other counsel. He knows that if and when, if he ever decides that he wants me to represent him, I'm available.
Are you convinced of his innocence?
Yes.
Okay, really. Line one in San Francisco, our guest is Charles Gary. Good evening.
Hello.
Hi.
I want to know, Charles Gary, what it takes to see one of my family members. I mean, all of my family members are now in Guyana. They can't receive any of my mail because the mail is censored in Guyana. I have tried to... when before they went to Guyana, I couldn't talk to them and they couldn't talk to me because I was an ex-People's Temple member. Now, if Jim Jones is so great and he is so open and he's so honest, why is it that when people leave the church, they're no longer allowed any contact with their family?
You can have all the contacts in the world with your family, and as a matter of fact, if you'll contact my office tomorrow or during the week, I will make arrangement that you can converse with your family through the radio.
Okay. For one thing, I want to tell you that it is a lie that you just said that I can have all the contact with my family that I want to. That is not true. I am not allowed by Jim Jones' own voice to talk to any of my family, and they are not allowed to talk to me. And that is a pattern that is repeated from... to all of us who have left the church. We are not allowed to see our family, and they are not allowed to see us. Now, the second point is that I want to talk to my family in person. Now, what I want to know is, what does it take to get people out of Guyana when they want to leave Guyana? I've had several reports that my father has tried to leave that country, and he was not able to. Because Jim Jones will not let people leave. When I was in that church, we were threatened that we would be killed if we would leave the place. Now, I want to know what it takes for them to leave the country if they will.
I've got a good idea, if I can interject at this point. Charles said he's going to arrange it, but let's do it this way. If you don't mind doing this, let me put you on hold and let Bill take your name. That way we can all kind of follow the progress of the case and we can report on it.
Is it too heavy to go on the radio?
Well, in terms of your name? Well, no, it's just a matter of liability.
I mean my question.
No, the question's just fine. If you'd like his answer, it's just
I just told you, just get in touch with me tomorrow. I will make any arrangements you want to do.
There are a lot of people listening over the radio, and I think
they'll
all deserve an answer.
Well, that's just it. The reason I suggested that you give the name to Bill is because the answer he gave you obviously is not one that you believe, and what you are saying is obviously not something that he believes. The only way we can resolve it is to follow the progress of the actual case.
I'll let you know what happened.
Please do, and I'll put you on hold, and Bill will take the number.
All right.
Okay, and we'll handle that one tomorrow.
Sure.
Easy enough. Line 2 in San Francisco. Charles Gary, your guest. Good evening.
Good evening. First of all, Mr. Gary, I'd like you to know I have great respect for what you've done in the past. And I think it's unfortunate that he's been caught up by the charisma of Jim Jones. Jim Jones did not have my permission to send my 16-year-old son Mark to Guyana. And I have tried to get him to return to me. I've received two letters from him which are identical in wording. I know he's not received any of my letters because the mail's all censored. I agree with the young lady that just spoke to you that I'd like to talk to my son. Because I talked to my son a year ago, and he begged me not to let him go. I was in the temple for 9.5 years. I know what it's like, and I know that these people will not be able to converse with us. But I would like to know what's being done to send my son back to me since he is very illegally.
I will tell you this, if you will contact me, I will arrange that you can talk directly with your own child, and through the radio. And whatever communications you want to, I will see to it that you can send them letters, and you will get letters back. And they will not be form letters. I will guarantee that.
All right, if you would like, I'll be more than glad to take your number 2, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right, we'll be glad to. Bill, if you'll take line 2 also. And we will continue in just a moment. First, I'm going to give you some numbers where you can talk to Charles Gary. 832-9707 if you're calling in the East Bay. And second, San Jose, 272-1233.
I want you to tell me the truth. How many babies have you had?
684.
I'm Ralph Story, and that is the truth. This amazing woman is Gladys Henry. 30 years.
Before we took the next call, because we were talking about this off the air, in Trimstown, not one but two consecutive listeners both said that the mail is censored in Guyana. If it is that much of a paradise, I couldn't imagine mail being censored. What's the story as you know it?
What I know is that the mail is not censored, and anyone that wants to leave there can leave anytime they want to. Anytime.
All right, then I'll play a little Sherlock Holmes. The very last thing you said intrigued me. You said, and they will not be form letters. Implication being what? That form letters are routinely sent or just
no,
as a response to the caller?
She implied that it was a form letter.
Is that a choice that's been made before?
I've never heard
of letters again. No,
never
okay.
Heard.
Well, let's take callers, line 3 in San Francisco. I'm Ron Owens with your guest, Charles Gary.
Hello?
Hi there.
Yeah, I heard you speak about a man you talked to 103 years old at the temple mission in Guyana.
Yes.
And it sounded tremendously that someone was so healthy and able to function so well at that age. What I wanted to ask you, is this voluntary on this man's part, you know, older people working? And I also wanted to ask if children have worked projects like being able to learn about different aspects of the farm life there.
Did children work? They want to work? And they desire to work, and everybody wants to work. They're building, they're all contributing, they're very happy to do so. And at night, they have programs that just overwhelm you. They have poetry that children recite. They sing, they dance, they do all of the things that children want to do and do.
To what extent is the People's Temple still functioning here in the Bay Area? Now, with Jim Jones not here, and Jim Jones very publicly saying he wanted to build a political base in the area, what's happening to the Temple?
Well, I understand it's operating
to the same extent. I mean, you took away...
I don't know. I'm not a member of the Temple. I have not been to the Temple. I've only been to the Temple twice. And I have not been there, but I understand that it's operating to have regular service.
No loss of membership or anything like that, or
that I don't know.
Okay, perhaps next time we can check on that. Line 5 in the East Bay. Good evening. I'm Ron Owens, KGO, and your guest is Charles Gary.
Hello, this is Sally, and I want to ask Mr. Gary what we as private citizens can do to get the Ku Klux Klan out of the border patrol business.
Well, I really don't know. You know, they filed a suit in San Diego, I believe it was, and the federal judge there threw the suit out and said that the Ku Klux Klan was not violating any laws. But I just wondered if what right the Ku Klux Klan has to make a border and take over governmental functions.
I think it's very frightful.
It's more than frightening. It's dangerous. It's a dangerous precedent, and I'm also disturbed about the fact that the Nazi Party, masquerading under the guise of civil rights and civil liberties, is infringing upon and passing on the poison that they're passing on. It has the earmarks of the early days of the Weimar Republic and the Nazi Party moving in.
Yes, it
is. It's very frightening.
All right, but let me ask you both the question, or specifically Charles and Colin, you may want to add a little bit to that, Sally. The whole concept of distasteful speech. Now, if you look at the American Civil Liberties Union stand, they're saying that you can say anything, any way, anytime, as long as you don't directly hurt someone else. And just as Sally, Charles Gary, Ron Owens, we all find what the Ku Klux Klan and what the American Nazi Party says, we all find that immensely repugnant. 5-10 years back, well, let's go 5 years back, that was the response of the Nixon administration to things that you were saying. But it was repugnant. We've got to find a way to stop this kind of garbage from being spread. I mean, where's the difference?
Well, the difference is very fundamental, Ron. I've been a member of the ACLU for many, many years. And before World War II, I was on the board. The thing that bothers me about that concept is that the Nazi Party, the Nazis, are not talking about expressing political opinions. They're talking about poison. They're talking about creating anti-Semitism, anti-black, anti-this, and anti-that. In such a way that, in my opinion, all they're doing is poisoning the atmosphere and the air. They're not. I don't think any group has a right to say that the Jews are this and the blacks are this and so forth. And as a matter of fact, they're passing off telephone calls where you call a certain number and what you hear there is degrading, insulting. And I don't consider that part of free speech. I don't consider that part of any human being to be able to pass out that kind of poison, that kind of tripe.
Sally, you concur?
Yeah, yes, very much. I'm white, but I'm from the South, and I don't think people out here are really aware of just what the Ku Klux Klan stands for and the harm that they can create. And this Border Patrol business scares me to death. The Nazis scare me, too.
All right, Sally, I appreciate the call. Thank you. Sally calling from the East Bay at 832-9707. One other item. Apparently, there are enough ways of being able to control the Ku Klux Klan right now, because apparently the word was, look, what they're doing is basically legal until they do something that's illegal, and once they do something that's illegal, the Border Patrol will stick all around. What's wrong with that?
I don't think the Border Patrol should permit them to be there at all. This is vigilante action by the most diabolical group that I know in America.
That's Charles Gary, never at a loss for words. And if you'd like to find some more, 272-1233, our number in San Jose.
You've seen cars advertised.
One of you on this very topic I was going to ask him about, and that is the whole concept of the public's right to know as opposed to an individual's right to a fair trial. What we're talking about is the gag rule. There's an article on page 2 of yesterday's Examiner, the Sunday Examiner, on that, on the demise of the gag order, because I get, what was it, in Nebraska, I believe, where the judge imposed that very, very heavy gag order, and that was challenged. Where do you stand? And after you're in the courtroom, on the one hand, you do feel the public has a right to know, on the other hand, you have clients. What's the story? How much do I, as an outsider, how much do I have a right to know in a court?
Well, you see, what you're talking about are two basic constitutional rights. The right of the defendant to get a fair trial, so that the atmosphere will not be jaundiced by pretrial publicity. Then the other constitutional right is the First Amendment right of the media to be able to disseminate whatever they consider to be news and opinions. And between those two basic rights, I choose the right of the media to be able to broadcast and pass on the information without any form of restrictions by any court.
Okay.
Or not. Because as long as the media is free to speak, to print, there will not be star chamber proceedings in courtrooms. As a person who was defended and been active for the last 10 years in some of the most controversial cases in the United States. And I've already attacked the fact that you can't get a fair trial because of the pretrial publicity. I still say that the media has got to be given a free hand and let them do what they have to do without any infringement on the part of the courts.
All right, well, let me
I'm afraid of courts. I'm afraid of courts.
Well,
in the Star Chamber proceedings, I'm afraid of that. I don't believe in it. You see, I want the media to be able to write whatever they want to, but I also want the right, without being gagged by the court, to be able to talk to the media to tell my client's side of the story.
I appreciate all that and basically support what you're saying, but I saw one big obstacle when this issue came up, and we were talking about it last week, and this was frankly enough to sway me, and I'm asking you this. That hypothetical case I suggest would be involved, you as the attorney for John Doe, and John Doe is accused, let's come up with something very, very ghastly. Okay, John Doe is accused of the rape and subsequent murder of 5 young girls. Okay, now he's your client, you've got to defend him. Whether John Doe is innocent or guilty, what's going to happen? I mean, this guy now, already he's got his face plastered all over the papers. Already he's got newspaper articles written on him. David Berkowitz made the cover of New York Magazine before it even been arraigned, okay? You've got a situation like that. Now, you add to that, let's say, televised proceedings. There may be a lot of people who don't look at their own mind. I mean, it's no longer a jury of 12. There might be a jury of 90 million. And within those 90 million, there are going to be people who feel that if, let's say, you get your client off and John Doe has been found innocent, they're going to say, I saw what was going on. That guy did it. And when you get into a bizarre case like that, something that really emotionalizes the public, people will react, won't they?
Well, of course they'll react. That's why the defendant has the right to ask for a change of venue, or to ask the case be dismissed upon the grounds that you cannot get a fair trial.
But then you're playing both ends against the middle. On the one hand, we're saying, give the public all the information it wants, and then on the other hand, we're saying, and if it gets all that information, and it is the defendant, then the defendant gets off. That's asinine.
That's why when we have two basic constitutional rights,
mm-hmm.
both equally powerful, the First Amendment and the Sixth Amendment, the right to a fair trial, when that happens, I don't believe in curtailing the rights of any one of them, and when things get way out of hand, then the defendant has the right to have the case dismissed.
So then really the answer is there's got to be some degree of control. Let's use radio and television as an example. We've got to be able to control it ourselves, because if we don't keep it down or if we do sensationalize it, then we become the culprits.
Well, whatever it is, and it only happens rarely, and when it does happen, then the case should be on ice until the atmosphere changes. But I do not favor a court gagging the press, the media, because I'm a lot more afraid of the Star Chamber proceedings of some of our Adolf Hitler type of judiciary that sits on the bench and thinks that they're God.
We'll go to line one in San Francisco. Charles Gary, your guest author of Street Fighter in the courtroom. Good evening.
Hi, how are you?
Just fine.
Wondering, what you just, to Charles, what you described in Diana sounds really fascinating. And I'm going to ask about Charles Lifestyles, and I was wondering, how did they organize the community there? And, like, is it, you know, like more utopian? And do they distribute, you know, food and goods to other parts of the country?
Well, right now, they're not furnishing goods to other parts of the country because they're not self-sustaining yet. But they are working towards that. They're in a socialist country, you understand. And the means of production have been taken over by the government in Guyana. And they feel that they're an integral part of that community. And some of the things that they're doing, the Guyanese government has already come to them, for example, in what they can do for the rest of the nation.
This is Ron Owens, and in March of 1978, I'm going to be vacationing in Russia, courtesy of Bruce Atkins World Travel Bureau, and you're invited to come with me.
First, there's about a minute and three quarters left in that time. We'll just throw a couple of questions, as many as I can answer. Number one, quick little answers. Carter administration, how's it doing so far? Is it disappointing, or is it doing what it was supposed to do?
I don't know. I'm worried about what he's trying to do. I don't like the idea that the media is beginning to write him. That bothers me. And I want to give him a chance.
How long is a chance? Another year? Say half of the term or what?
Well, you see, some of the things he's doing that I think that are great. For instance, the Panama Treaty is very, very important, and it's about time that we cleaned up our act in South America and in the areas that they think we are being yunky dollar. And on the question of unemployment and distribution of the wealth, he's dragging his feet.
All right, one other quick question. Senate Bill 1 has now come back, and it's going to start running us as, I think, Senate Bill 1437. I'm not sure of the number. They've changed it somewhat. Have they changed it enough to satisfy you?
No way.
It doesn't surprise you that Ted Kennedy speaks.
Yes, I was going to say, I'm very unhappy about that. When he's ganging up with McClellan, I began to wonder.
You do view that, the new Senate bill, despite the modifications, do you view it as much of a threat to our lives as Senate Bill 1?
I consider more of a threat, because the other bill was patently unconstitutional.
This one might just
might get by.
All right, name of the book if you'd like to read about this fascinating gentleman is Street Fighter in the Courtroom. It's by Charles Gary and also Art Goldberg, published by Dutton, available at $11.95. Charles, look forward to having you on again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Did your weather fail with me?